and the revival of self-confidence and self-activity of the workers and the students is, in my opinion, a much bigger guarantee for that capitalist restoration will not take place than censorship, than police dictatorship, or than repressive measures of any type whatsoever. And it is precisely in this ideological and political sub-product, if we can call it like that, of the economic reforms that I see their most positive result. Let me substantiate this by the example of Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia was the prototype of the countries where capitalism was abolished, where the experiments in decentralization, in application of material incentives, in reintroduction of market economy, in realignment with the international capitalist economy went farthest and had undoubtedly its most pronounced negative effects from the point of view of socialist of construction of a new socialist society and of socialist consciousness. But all those who are talking about the inevitable and gradual return, restoration of capitalism in Yugoslavia forgot the other side of the picture. They forgot that in such an atmosphere of greater freedom of criticism and greater freedom of thought, the workers also and the radical students also could act more freely than they could do in other countries, and that it is inconceivable that a large working class, which had after all made a socialist revolution in its country, where the change of relations of production had not been introduced by a foreign army, as they had in most of the other Eastern European countries, but was the result of a native socialist revolution, it was inconceivable that this working class would not start to react and react very strongly on the political and ideological field against growing social inequality, against return of unemployment, and all the other very negative products of the exaggerated decentralization in the last 3 years. And this is exactly what happened this summer. This summer we saw first the Belgrade students and then the workers' representatives at the National Trade Union Congress in Czechoslovakia react in an extremely violent and an extremely conscious, not revisionist and not right-wing, but left-wing way against these negative results of the economic reforms and clamor with great force for greater equality, for the disappearance of unemployment, for guarantee of full employment, for greater social security benefits, for increased economic growth, for reduction of unequal development between different nationalities, and all other demands which any advanced socialist could conceivably formulate under these conditions. We have there a very strange revision of Marxism, if I might use this form, on behalf of those who think that you will have gradual reintroduction of capitalism in Eastern Europe as the result of these economic reforms. You have a strange revision of Marxism on behalf of all these currents, because what they forget is that reintroduction of capitalism as abolition of capitalism cannot be the result of any automatic economic process, but can only be the result of struggle of social forces, struggle of living social forces, and that you cannot eliminate the working class of these countries as a factor in politics in these countries, that you cannot eliminate this working class from the social forces which will and which are weighing on the evolution of these countries, which gives the whole story about the introduction or restoration of capitalism a completely different slant and a much more realistic way of looking at it, and which means in reality that the restoration of capitalism on the basis of these economic reforms is extremely unlikely, as long as you have a growing capacity of self-expression and self-activity on behalf of the workers and the progressive students in these countries. I will perhaps conclude not with the description of an absolute utopia, but with a few words of description of what I consider the ideal model for management of an economy which is building socialism, because I should have said it in the beginning, that in my opinion you do not have a socialist society or a socialist economy in any of the Eastern European countries, and for that in any country in the world. The definition which Marx gives of the socialist society is to say a society in which different classes, class differences, has disappeared, and in which you have no more commodity production. Such a society does not exist anywhere in the world. What you have in Eastern Europe are societies in transition between capitalism and socialism, at different levels of transition, where the basic problems of building a socialist society have been only partially solved. What has been solved is the problem of the private ownership of the means of production. What has not yet been solved is the problem of gradual disappearance of economic scarcity, gradual withering away of commodity production, and gradual withering away of classes and of the state, which are all more or less correlated social processes. Now, we have several models of administering these societies in transition. We have the Stalinist model at the one extreme, we have the Yugoslav model at the other extreme, and we have between these two extremes a whole series of variations, many, many of them, practically as many as there are countries today, and even more than there are countries, because in the same country you have had successive number of models applied. We cannot analyze the relative advantages and disadvantages of all these models, and from the point of view of economic rationalities, and from the point of view of a certain number of socialist priorities, which I consider embedded in socialist theory and in socialist goals, but we can say in general that either over-centralization, which gives absolute monopoly of power to a bureaucracy in the management of the economy and the management of the social surplus product, nor excessive decentralization, which reintroduces large elements of market economy, and as the result of that, growing social inequality and growing alienation into the society, can be considered ideal models. The ideal solution lies probably somewhere between these two extremes. It lies in the understanding that the goal should be the largest possible application of self-management, producers, workers' self-management, at every relevant level of decision-making, is to say not only at plant level, but also at regional and national level. It lies in abolition of any political monopoly which is in contradiction with this self-management of producers and citizens, is to say it implies the restoration of political freedoms for the mass of the population, of the producers in the population, the freedom to develop different political tendencies and parties, real free access to the press, the idea which has now been revived by Brezhnev that socialism equals censorship, and that the abolition of censorship equals restoration of capitalism, is one of the biggest discredits which you can give to socialism in the eyes of the inhabitants of this world. And how anybody can say such monstrosities can only be understood if you understand the Marxist theory of ideology, is to say that what people say does not represent from a certain level on any rational argument, but only very specific social interests. And what Comrade Brezhnev means when he says that the abolition of censorship is the restoration of capitalism is in reality that the abolition of censorship threatens his rule and the rule of his social group, which is of course absolutely correct, not the rule of the working class, but the rule of this bureaucracy. But the conclusion which we have to draw out of that is that an abolition of monopoly of power in the hands of one privileged group is necessary to have real self-management of workers, producers, and citizens at the relevant levels of decision-making, which is, in my opinion, the socialist democratic solution of the problem of managing a society in transition between capitalism and socialism. This implies the maintenance of centralized planning. This implies that you have centralized investment decisions, at least the big decisions, the big investment decisions must be centralized, but that they should be centralized in a democratic way, is to say that planning organs should submit different variants of plans to a Congress of workers' councils, which after free and open discussion with all the necessary publicity should be then called upon to take a decision in one sense or another. The tremendous difference, advantage of such a system compared and with the capitalist system of the West and the system of the Stalinist bureaucracy in the East is self-evident. In the West, you have capitalists, monopolists, who take economic decisions, and when they make a mistake, millions of workers have to pay for that mistake, either in the form of unemployment or in the form of higher prices and lower income, but they themselves suffer very little. Generally, they suffer not at all. They maintain all their positions of power and privileges. The same thing is mutatis mutandis also true for the leaders or the members of the Politburo in any of the Eastern European countries. When they take a decision and the decision is wrong, there will be millions of people who will pay the price for this wrong decision, but they themselves will not have neither their power nor their privileges, at least as a social group, significantly reduced as the result of that mistake. In the democratic system of management of a socialized economy, which I tried to describe very quickly, you would at least have that advantage, that tremendous pedagogic advantage, that people take the decisions who also suffer the consequences of these decisions, and that you then have a very powerful built-in break on too big too large a number of mistakes and too rapid succession of these mistakes, because people will be very careful before condemning themselves to unemployment or to high prices of consumer goods or any of the other processes which wrong decisions in the distribution of the national income generally entail. So I think that a system of democratically socialist management, self-management of the economy and the society is the most democratic system, the most free system, and the most educative system which you can today imagine. And that is the reason, of course, why I am in favor of socialism and against capitalism and against the type of bureaucratic management which is today applied in the Soviet Union and the other Eastern European countries.